Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
It's Friday night. You survived the week. Well done. The Money Show, brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank, 7 minutes past six. We'll talk to Razia Khan this evening. She is one of the world's top economists. She is at Standard Chartered. All about the looming Moody's decision. Moody's, the ratings agency that hates us least, is the last one to keep us on investment grade. And we'll catch up with Razia in just a moment. She's on the line to us from London as to what the temperature is. And chat to her also, as the heads up, Razia, just in case you're wondering, just a bit about Brexit and its impact on emerging markets like South Africa. Gary McNamara, he is with Sundown Private Wealth, our market commentator tonight. Lots to talk about in terms of the listing on the NASDAQ of Lyft. It's one of these unicorns. We've heard about unicorns. Unicorns are massively expensive companies and don't necessarily always have the profits to underpin them. I'll tell you who our Make Money Monday special edition guest is. It is a coup of excellent proportions arranged by my producers. They've done very well this week. I'll tell you all about that in about 25 minutes time. I'll bring you some of the best bits, including the chat we had with Edward Kiswetter, the new SARS commissioner, sir, and wrap up also with the brutal biz quiz. That's all coming up on this evening's edition of The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7.
At the end of the first quarter, it means that 3 months of the year 2019 have come and gone. And we're one quarter of the way into the year. The JSE on the quarter, 7% up on the year so far, which is about as good as it's likely to get in an environment where growth forecasts have been scaled back dramatically. The S&P 500 over the same period of time is up 13%. So while we could celebrate the fact that we're up 7% in a single quarter, we're certainly underperforming one of the world's biggest stock markets. One of the issues may be the looming issue of a rating downgrade. Most people I speak to speak about a downgrade as in an inevitability. They're just kind of mixed on the time frames. I'm not so sure that we necessarily get a downgrade. It's always a risk, of course, but let's get the expert view. Chief Economist for Africa and Middle East, Global Research at Standard Chartered Bank, Razia Khan, on the line just from London this evening. We never used to notice the ratings agencies, Razia. They used to come to town, they used to have their meetings, they would go away, they'd publish their pronouncements late on a Friday night. It would either be up, down, or sideways, or nothing would change, and it was fine. Suddenly, it really, 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 really matters, and we're nervous and panicking. Are we right to panic?
Well, this is largely the case, Bruce. Your observation that in the past, ratings really didn't make a difference to the ordinary person in South Africa. And that may have been because in the distant, distant past, South Africa was doing rather well. There was at least enough growth to improve the fiscal outlook. Just before the global financial crisis, South Africa was running fiscal surpluses. There had been a big reduction in net debt levels. And generally, the trend was for rating improvements, for upgrades, and it tended to be less newsworthy. But there is a very important reason why everyone is so fixated with this decision now. First of all, Moody's is the last rating agency to have South Africa on an investment grade rating, but it's also the case that if there were to be a change to the outlook to the rating, this is important. The outlook is currently stable, so we wouldn't be looking at a downgrade just yet, whatever the decision for Moody's, perhaps later tonight. If that were to happen, because South Africa's investment grade rating is so important for South African bonds to be included in an index that is followed by investors around the world, if it were to lose that, or maybe even the suggestion that it loses that, that could have much more of a material impact on the currency. And that perhaps is one of the reasons why South Africans are now so much more fixated with this discussion around ratings.
I mean, if nothing else, it's made us pay far more attention reaction to what happens on markets, because unfortunately, regardless of what you think about markets, markets do affect absolutely every single aspect of your life, like it or not. The bond market on the JSE today, I mean, the R186 government bond, the yield improved by 1% to 8.6%. It's indicating that a full-blown downgrade is highly unlikely. And from what you're saying, you don't believe it's likely either for us to sort of skip the outlook jump and go straight to downgrade.
It usually takes some pretty extreme events for that sort of thing to happen. It's pretty rare. Ratings agencies would have to have very good justification to ignore what their own guidance. And in a sense, that outlook on the rating is precisely that. It's guidance in terms of what to expect. The stable outlook that Moody's currently assigns to its investment grade rating of South Africa suggests that it's not expecting to be making any significant changes to that rating in the next 12 to 18 months. Now, if things have moved to a materially worse position, if that assessment were to change, it's much more likely that we would see the assigning of a negative outlook first. Key takeaway, very little likelihood of an actual downgrade today.
And our markets support you, our bond market supports you, our equity market certainly supports you. There was absolutely no fear in our market today at all as we wrapped up the first quarter. Why is it that Moody's is so indescribably patient where S&P and Fitch lost patience long ago?
Well, this has been a very key theme for investors generally. And we do recall that it was in November 2017, on the eve of the ANC leadership election, that we did see the downgrade from S&P, whilst Moody's, in a sense, decided to give South Africa the benefit of the doubt. There was significant event risk. Wait to see what the outcome of that would be. Would we get more reform momentum? Would we see an acceleration of growth thereafter? And Moody's, perhaps in very good faith, anticipating that perhaps that political change alongside other factors was going to be driving better outcomes, assigned a stable outlook to its South Africa rating way back in 2018. Since then, lots of investors would say, well, there are signs of improvement. Some of the governance issues that South Africa had been saddled with, those daily headlines around state capture, at least South Africa's institutions are being strengthened. Things are moving in the right direction. But at the same time, growth has disappointed. There are big issues at Eskom. Eskom has needed more support from the government. This has real-world implications for South Africa's debt profile. And the question is Moody's now finally going to be reacting to some of these issues?
And they have to react in some way, don't they? I mean, there are a couple of people who are saying, you know, there are options open to them. They can not make an announcement at all and just simply wait to see what happens in the elections. They can make an announcement to say, we won't make an announcement, or they can change the outlook, or as we've discounted, I think, this evening, downgrade us fully. So really, they've got three options realistically open to them this evening. Is there a chance, in your view, that we simply won't get any announcement at all? They have done that in the past, where they've just given us the silent treatment, if you like.
In our view, this is probably the most likely outcome this particular evening. Moody's has gone to great lengths to stress that these dates that it puts out for ratings reviews are indicative only. There is no reason why they should be compelled to produce a rating on these particular dates. Equally, they could move at any point if they thought there was sufficient justification. Now, what would be the reasons for not changing the outlook on South Africa's rating right now? Although growth has disappointed, although we've seen the recent budget projections that debt is going to peak at an even higher level than we had previously thought was going to be the case, Moody's has argued for some time that it needs a lot more clarification. What is the turnaround plan for Eskom? How is this going to be enacted? How will it be made operational? There's still quite a lot of uncertainty about a number of things, and it may be that some ratings agencies just want to wait until there is greater clarity. Perhaps that comes with actual post-election reforms. That would be a reason to give South Africa the benefit of the doubt, perhaps not producing a ratings review today.
Yeah, it seems that that is a distinct possibility. If I can go back to where you are this evening, and that is in London, Theresa May today losing her third Brexit vote. I mean, I don't even know if she knows what's going on with Brexit anymore, considering just how blooming confusing this entire process is. She got a big blood nose today.
It has certainly been a very lively time and a reminder that event risk is not limited to emerging markets alone.
Yeah.
So the uncertainty essentially continues through to next week.
It's amazing. I'd like you just to listen to a clip of audio that we found of Nicola Sturgeon, the Scottish First Minister. You may have seen this on your television screen, Razia, but many South Africans wouldn't. And this Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, is arguably the only politician in the United Kingdom who's actually coming out of this Brexit mess looking better than when she went in. She'd been deeply principled and absolutely clear on her position all the way through. And Nicola Sturgeon, Razia, like many of us, is astounded by the state of play in the United Kingdom, where Theresa May, the Prime Minister, is holding on to her job despite the extraordinary events in this Brexit mess.
It's traditional in politics. It's traditional for leaders to say to colleagues, you know, if you don't back me on an issue of such importance, I might have to resign. Not in the Tories, though. Theresa May's position is, if you don't back me, I'll stay. You know, Theresa May must be the only leader in living memory who has tried to fall on her own sword and has managed to miss.
They're very unkind, Razia Khan, very unkind. But, I mean, the real politics of this is that nobody in British politics is looking particularly good right now. And it's kind of reassuring, frankly, and you as an expert on emerging markets must be enjoying it as well, watching that no environment is perfect.
I'm not sure enjoy is precisely the right word, but it's certainly been lively.
Lively it is. I mean, is there a risk to South Africa? Let's say Britain does crash out of the European Union on the 12th of April. I think that is the risk here. If British politicians continue to refuse to back Theresa May, that this Brexit thing could happen. There's an emergency summit happening on the 10th of April. Is there a negative consequence for South Africa out of this Brexit mess? Is it something we need to be paying attention to?
Well, what we do know is that the rand in particular, as a very liquid traded currency, that is, it tends to be seen as a proxy for risk appetite. And what we've seen in the last week alone is that events elsewhere, Turkish local elections, for example, expected this weekend, to the extent that investors are taking a view on a certain economy and they can't always express it in terms of those particular markets, it does tend to impact risk more broadly. We saw the rand weaken, possibly for reasons that had nothing to do with South Africa. In the event of a no-deal Brexit, we think that this would be a significant enough risk event to have an impact across the board. So yes, it may seem confusing, it may be very difficult to keep track of things, but it is still a very important development, potentially, for what happens to the South African rand.
Razia Khan on the line to us from London this evening. Thank you. She's Chief Economist for Africa and Middle East at Standard Chartered Bank. On the line to us this evening from Brexit-ish Britain.
The Money Show. The Markets.
So Gary McNamara from Sunlum Private Wealth, our market commentator tonight. And what a day on the JSE. Brexit, no, we're not scared of that. The risk of a Moody's downgrade, we're not scared of that. It's the end of the first quarter. Buy everything that we were selling in the first quarter and buy it hard and fast and push up retail share prices by 5% and banks by 3% and make your own books look good at the end of the first quarter. Too cynical or accurate?
Yeah, Bruce, a little bit cynical. I think.
Oh,
that,
come on.
No, I think.
Play my game.
The rand was a little bit overdone earlier on in the week on the back of some Turkish uncertainty. So we saw the rand coming back, and I think, as you've commented earlier, I think the market's talking about us missing a potential downgrade later tonight. And you've seen the banks and the retailers rallying today. Sure, it was quarter end, and they would have been certainly some window dressing. But bearing in mind a lot of these shares, the retailers in particular, are down about 25% year to date before today's move. So they've reflected a lot of the bad news. But then, no doubt, quite a nice recovery today on the back of what looks like we're going to miss a downgrade on that side. But also a good quarter to make up for what was a really tough year last year, just over 7%, as you said earlier.
Yeah, 7% on the JSE in Rand terms, and I would be celebrating that. But Financial Times tweet this evening, just coming up in my peripheral vision, to say the S&P 500 is headed for its biggest March quarter in 21 years. The S&P 500 relative to the JSE in dollar terms, up 13%. You know, world markets have been very supportive of equity markets around the globe. And South Africa's up only 7. If what you're saying, we've had a nice bounce after a terrible 2018, if we didn't have this ratings downgrade risk hanging over us, perhaps we would have done even better.
Absolutely, Bruce. And, you know, you put it into context, 7% also includes probably a slightly weaker rand, which generally helps the market. And we've seen a bounce in the likes of Naspers, British American Tobacco, Anheuser-Busch, that are all companies that benefit from a weaker rand. But there's no doubt America globally has been really an island of performance relative to the rest of the world. So emerging markets in Asia have been tough. Europe's been a tough space. So as you say, S&P up 13% year to date has really been an island that's really performed, not just this year, over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you haven't been in the S&P 500, it's really been a tough investment environment over the last wee while.
And much of this first quarter's improvement in the S&P 500, again, after a really bad fourth quarter last year. I mean, toward the end of last year, it felt like the U.S. market rally was coming to an end. We were the bull market had died, and the bear was beginning to wake up and stretch and yawn and was getting ready to take over.
Yeah, the big driver, Bruce, is a change in mindset from the Fed in America, where they've been looking at some of the growth numbers there and saying, well, maybe we were a little bit too aggressive in forecasting interest rate moves. They were talking late last year about another four interest rate moves in America, which obviously pushes up your cost of funding and sucks liquidity out of the system. Now they're talking this year very much more dovishly, and they're talking actually no interest rate moves. And the yield curve in America started to reflect that, and I think that's supported the liquidity back into the equity markets, but it does also reflect that maybe the global economy is not as strong as we would like it to be. So there's a risk that they're running out of ammunition if they don't get those interest rates up. So that's really been driving the market with this reduced interest rate outlook.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's one particular part of the U.S. story. Another part of the U.S. story that never ceases to amaze me is this huge appetite to invest in companies that don't make money. And the latest one of these is a company that lost $1 billion in 2018. It lost $700 million in 2017. And now it's listed in the U.S. on the NASDAQ, and it's worth $24 billion the last time I checked. And it's a business called Lyft, which is an Uber competitor. Hey, people are bonkers, yet throwing money at companies that maybe one day will make a profit.
Yeah, Bruce, it's a trend we've seen probably for a couple of years now, where people are really throwing out the old traditional business models of bricks and mortar and really embracing technology. And if you can get scale, it obviously takes quite a lot of capital, so listing helps them to raise some capital. But you need to get a critical mass, and then you get all the benefits that go with it, with extra usage and advertising revenue and everything like that. So the world's been very much driven to these new age, new technology, distribution type businesses, and they're prepared to pay for them in the view that they're going to make money down the line. But as you say, it does come with quite a lot of risk if they don't execute correctly, because there's just no balance sheet to talk of.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have anything either. I mean, these are the guys that, you know, famously, the Airbnb guys own no hotels, the Ubers and the Lyfts of the world own no cars, yet they are the biggest movers of people and the biggest accommodators of people in the world. Extraordinary stories. But I saw a great headline today: unicorns are not profitable and nobody cares. And is that indicative of where we are in an investment cycle? That it's all of this hype-driven frenzy that if you're not in it, you're out of it. If you're out of it, you're going to miss out. It's market FOMO at its apex.
Yeah, to some degree, Bruce. But, you know, if you pick an Amazon or a Google early on, and, you know, if you can cut the losers quite quickly, you do tend to get that performance. And I think what the investment world's looking at, which ones are going to be the winners. And it's quite difficult to pick at this stage, but there are obviously examples like an Amazon or a Google. Once you get to that critical mass, you almost build your own moat. And that's really where the investment world's going. So I don't think it's all just a risk of moving out, but it comes with huge risks for traditional businesses if they're not embracing this change.
Yeah, and talking about embracing change, the UK not big on change. The UK Prime Minister Theresa May losing another critical vote on Brexit today. It's the third attempt she's tried to get her Brexit deal through. 344 votes against 286. And then Donald Tusk, who is the European Council President, is calling for an emergency summit on the 10th of April. But Britain could crash out on the 13th, I think, or 12th or 13th of April. This is very high-stakes stuff that's happening in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I'm tired of Brexit, and I think they must be even more tired of talking about Brexit.
And you don't have to even pay attention to it, and it's dull, but important.
No, absolutely. And I think, Bruce, if they had to have that vote again, I think people didn't really understand the implications. I think it would be a landslide to not leave the Brexit. But now they're sitting in a very awkward situation, and politicians being politicians, they don't like to make tough decisions. So it's a bit of a mess at the moment, and nobody can really forecast where this is going, other than it's just a mess at the moment.
It most certainly is, Gary. Thank you very much indeed. Gary McNamara is with Sunlum Private Wealth on a stonking day. I haven't asked you. No downgrade, really? Eh? No downgrade?
No, I think we're going to probably avoid a downgrade, maybe a negative outlook with hopefully a couple of things to work on, but whether our government's listening, because they've been warned a few times before, but I think no good downgrade tonight.
Yeah, not tonight. Thank you, Gary McNamara from Sunlum Private Wealth. Wrapping up today's huge day on the JSE.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank.
We need a drum roll because this is big. This is big. I'll do sport in just a second. Butlo is standing by. But first, let me tell you what is happening on the next Money Show. The activist and former judge in the Constitutional Court, LB Sachs, in studio to talk about his relationship with money on Make Money Mondays. Looking forward to that discussion. In our Business Books feature, we're going to find out what the chief executive and the founder of the Business Book Club, Shark Fellerman, is reading. We'll try and catch up on what's happening on Brexit and, of course, whether we survive the downgrade, what happens next in terms of the South African economy, all next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. At 92.7. And 106 FM.
Videos of kids playing games. Oh my goodness gracious me. Ban the devices. I'm so looking forward to LB Sachs. Really looking forward to it on Monday. Well done, producers. Sometimes. So, now, on to the best bits of The Money Show. That is what we do every day, Friday at this time. I'm sorry, I've amused myself and I'm now scared to move out of the studio because my producers may take me down. Coming up is the best bits of The Money Show. And what we like to do at this time every week is to just give you a little taste of the smorgasbord of great delights that we have brought forward to you on a weekly basis. And in the hope that you'll go, you know what, that sounded really interesting. I might go and find the podcast of that. And you go to our podcast services and you download The Money Show podcast. You can do it as simply as asking your Alexa or asking your Siri, because she'll activate. She hasn't activated now, which is good. And you can just say, please play The Money Show podcast. Always say please, because that is the polite thing to do when activating your personal assistant, your electronic personal assistant. And it's that easy. Now, Basil Skourdos joined us. Now, Basil is not somebody you would have heard of necessarily outside of the Naspers building in the foreshore of Cape Town. He's the chief financial officer of Naspers. And Naspers this week took a decision that has been long overdue. And that is to take their global internet assets and put them into a new vehicle. That new vehicle is going to be a company listed on the Euronext exchange in Amsterdam. The theory being that lots of global investors who might want to get access to Naspers' 31% stake in Chinese internet giant Tencent might not want all the other stuff that Naspers has got, and certainly don't want to come to the JSE to tie up their money in South Africa. There is a perception issue with which we have to deal as a country. But they may very well be very keen on the biggest internet business in Europe if it's listed on the Euronext exchange. And that's what this company, NewCo, will essentially be. The biggest internet business in Europe when it lists in the second half of this year. So Basil Skourdos, the chief financial officer at Naspers, told us why Naspers shareholders will be affected by the group's new listing on the Euronext in Amsterdam.
Our intention to list a new global consumer internet group on the Euronext in Amsterdam, and which will also have a secondary listing on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. It's important to note that this is not a spin-off or an unbundling. Naspers will remain a 75% shareholder in this entity. and therefore continue to capture the vast value that it currently has. The way we will do the transaction is we will offer our existing shareholders the opportunity to swap out some of their holding in NASPAC for a holding in this newly listed subsidiary company of NASPAC.
Explain that to me, please, because if I own one share in NASPAC today, what will my shareholding of that one share in NASPAC look like once this deal is done?
So what we will do is we'll do a capitalization issue to shareholders and for a new class of shares called M shares. And then what shareholders will be able to do with that share is either select shares in the newly listed NASPAC subsidiary or more shares in NASPAC. Now, the reason we give shareholders the choice is because some South African shareholders, primarily retail investors, would probably see an acceleration of their capital gains if they took Newco shares. So this way, they can take NASPAC shares. We also have some index factors on the JSE that will not be able to take Newco shares. And that's the construct that we have today. So effectively, we'll do a capitalization issue. When you get M share, you'll be able to say, give me Newco shares or give me more NASPAC shares. And the way we're looking to construct this is at the end of that process, our existing shareholders will own 25% of this newly listed NASPAC subsidiary.
Can I suggest to NASPAC that they buy their own cell phone company and put a tower on the roof of their building? Bad cell phone signal. Maybe the further you move up in that building, the worse the signal gets because you're so far above the cell phone signals. Oh, not a great cell phone signal there. But we did catch up with Edward Kiesvetter this week, the new SARS commissioner. He is a former chief executive of Alexander Forbes, the country's biggest pension fund administrator. And I did ask him, and I said to him, look, you've got all of the reasons in the world to not do this job. You've semi-retired. You've got your own education business that you're invested in. You're sitting on the board of Transnet helping the cleanup there. Why would anybody in their right mind go into the snake pit? And it is a snake pit because we've seen the State Capture Commission and the SARS Commission and all of the other commissions. Why would anybody go into a snake pit like that, even if you're asked by the president?
We can't all stand on the sideline and criticize and point fingers, but none of us are prepared to reach out and respond to the Tumamina call that the president genuinely and sincerely expressed to all South Africans. And so, yes, I did have plans and the hope that I could settle into a portfolio life in terms of retirement, but to be called and asked to do such an important role is a privilege and a unique honor, and understanding that it is an area where I can add value, it is a call hard to ignore. And so I'm ready. I'm under no illusion that it's going to be a tough challenge. But thankfully, this is not a job, a one-man job. I will be supported by able leaders like Martin, who has done a sterling job, and also by the hundreds and thousands of staff who give their life to SARS.
Edward Kiesvetter. Maybe SARS can invest in a cell phone company too. Ranelle Stander, the head of Comair's aviation division. She's had a long history in transport and aviation. She was at one time appointed director general in the Department of Transport. She worked at Air Traffic Navigation Services, where she was the chief executive as well. And late last year, she was poached to head up the businesses of BA Comair and also of Kalula.com in South Africa. She was our shapeshifter this week. And she told us what she was busy with when she was offered the new job.
I was helping at SA Express, you know, just before it got grounded. And Eric, you know, called me and said, have you left Sasol? And I said, no, I haven't. I've just been helping out at SA Express. Minister Godin had asked that I come across and help. And then he said, would you like to have a chat and explore opportunities at Comair? And I had no idea what it was likely to be, but I thought, well, I'd go for the chat. And then he presented me with, the plan that he had for how he wanted to diversify the Comair Limited Group, etc., and showed me all the different positions that were likely to become available. And I thought maybe it was one of the others. And then he said, no, I'd like you to run the airline. And I was, wow, you know, and I said, I'd love that. And that's how it started. And it probably took about 2-3 months and I joined Comair.
What's the attraction? I mean, airline chief executives I've spoken to, I think almost universally, were born with jet fuel in their veins. I mean, there's something very specific about wanting to run an airline.
I've always wanted to run an airline. As I said, that for a long time I've been in the industry, and I've always, my passion was really always to run an airline. But that opportunity did not present itself. So I went to Civil Aviation Authority, I went to government, I went to air traffic and navigation. And when the opportunity presented, I took it. And so I think it was a bit about being in the right place at the right time and taking the opportunity when it presented itself.
Ranelle Sander, the person who runs BA Comair and Kalula.com. Big turnaround job underway there. Ricky Rick. Oh, man, what a guy. Better known to his parents because they called him Ricardo Mercado, and he kind of admitted, I don't know why I changed it, because Ricardo Mercado is quite cool. So is Ricky Rick. But Ricardo Mercado, he's beginning to, I think, regret changing to Ricky Rick. He was our Make Money Monday special edition guest last week, or this week. Did I mention next week's guest? Judge Albie Sachs, quite excited about that. Well, Ricky Rick was on this last Monday, and he told us about some of his vices when it comes to money.
My worst consumption habit stems from my biggest love and my biggest joy too, which is fashion. Yeah, so it always gets hectic, you know. Fashion is probably the fastest way to burn money, like literally burn it. It's like the fastest way to burn money.
How big's your cupboard at home?
Quite small, because we give away a lot of our clothes when we're done with them or when we don't have use for them. So I give away.
Do you go to the Kate Middleton School of Fashion? You wear something once, maybe twice, maybe at a push three times.
Earlier on in my career, that was sort of the vibe, you know, and that was sort of like the marketing strategy, you know. And now that I'm a little bit older and I'm a little bit wiser about how we need to spend and how we need to cut back on our habits, you know, because, you know, as much as fashion is sort of like fashion is a job for me, and it also creates income for me, but at the same time, it's a habit that I always had, even as a kid. You know, I was always addicted to like the newest sneakers and the newest things, you know, so, yeah.
He's seen the error of his ways, says Ricky Rick. Boss Zonge. Oh, right. We had a great week on The Money Show. I hope you agree. And you tell your friends about it, and you get them to listen to the podcast, and they join us on a weekly basis. And the bits you miss, you catch up on the podcast, and you share the best bits with your mates on The Money Show. Coming up in a moment, the Brutal Biz Quiz. It's how we like to wrap up the week and wrap up your Friday on The Money Show. We like to test your mettle. We like to test whether or not you've been paying attention. Who was the last full-time SARS commissioner? There was an acting SARS commissioner for a bit, but I want to know the name of the SARS commissioner before Tom Moyani. It is a brutal question, because this guy's like the Beatle who was there before Ringo Starr. Nobody ever remembers his name. It was Pete Best, by the way. But nobody ever remembers the name Pete Best. He was like the first drummer of the Beatles. Who was the full-time SARS commissioner before Tom Moyani? 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. If you want to impress us this evening, get it without Googling. If you have to Google, Google fast.
The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Oh, and it is deliciously brutal. Who was the last full-time SARS commissioner before Tom Moyane? ZZ?
Yes, sir.
Who was it?
Yes, it's Makhashule.
Which Makhashule? Was it Obut Makhashule, Papa Makhashule? Which Makhashule was it?
It was Papa Makhashule.
Who? No, Zize, not Papa Makhashule. Sophia, which Makhashule was it?
I think it was Opa.
Opa! Yes, we went from brother to father to Opa. Opa Makhashule. Absolutely. Sorry, Zizi, but this is the Brutal Biz Quiz, not the tame friendly Biz Quiz where you get close and we go, all right then. You've got to be specific, like Sophia. Edward Kiesvetter announced to the position this week, replacing Mark King, and he's been acting as the SARS commissioner for the last year or so, and he followed Tom Moyani. Before Tom Moyani, Ivan Pillay was actually the SARS commissioner in an acting capacity. He'd replaced Opa Makhashule. He resigned following an investigation into allegations that he offered a chartered accountant job at SARS, and it all got very, very messy. Which company was founded in Stellenbosch in 1915? And it published the daily newspaper De Burger and later De Huisgenoot.
No idea.
You don't know that, Sophia. You
no,
are going
I
to kick yourself, I'm afraid, Sophia. Okay, it started up producing the newspaper, daily newspaper, Der Burger, and a magazine called De Huisgenoot. And then they produced an English version of De Huisgenoot called De You. Then they dropped the De. They dropped the De. So Huisgenoot and Burger, De Burger. Chris, which company was that? Oh, no, sorry. Where's Chris? Let's put Chris on. Yeah, there's Chris. Hello, Chris.
It was
Naspers. It is Naspers, absolutely right. The internet media giant this week announced that big restructuring of its shareholding, which we were chatting about just a moment ago. What do you call the collection of chemical... Oh, no, that's too hard. It's the way Sasol... It's the process Sasol uses to make fuel, and it's the collection of chemical reactions that converts a mixture of carbon monoxide and hydrogen into liquid hydrocarbons. Basically, it enables companies like Sasol to make petrol from coal, oil from coal. What is that process called, Chris?
Oh, gee, you got me there.
You need to listen to Colin Cullis on a Wednesday night, just after 7 o'clock. And take a Disprin. So Chris, I'm disappointed. I tell you what, let's take an ad break, because this is a hard one. It's a science question that is a business question. The chemical reaction that converts a mixture of carbon monoxide and hydrogen into liquid hydrocarbons. What is that process called?
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank.
The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
And it is brutal. What do you call the collection of chemical reactions that converts a mixture of carbon monoxide and hydrogen into liquid hydrocarbons? Meshach?
Yeah, Bruce, is that called syn fuel?
You get syn fuels through the process, Meshach, but the process is called something else. Sorry, Meshach. Ryan?
Is it the Fischer-Tropsch process?
Fischer-Tropsch, but we'll give it to you because, hey, that was pretty good. And my producer rolled her eyes when I got pedantic. She wouldn't roll her eyes at Eusebius, and he gets pedantic, but there, hey. So Fischer-Tropsch process, yes. In Business Unusual, Colin Cullis spoke about this old technique that has been used by Sasol and Petro SA to convert coal and gas to fuel. And because that is so impressive, Ryan, you're the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night. Well done to you, Ryan. Congratulations. The Fischer-Tropsch process gets him the envied title of whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. And yeah, this last week, it's always good. I mean, Colin's a great communicator and he finds great stories. But if you want to really understand global warming and you want to understand what it is and the consequences and what we have to do to fight it, really Business Unusual this last week explains it beautifully. And that is it for The Money Show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time on The Money Show, which is Monday with, did I mention LB Sachs? With LB Sachs and others. Good night.